Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Simulcast on the Team 980 in Richmond. Check us out on 910 The Fan. And we're streaming live on the Odyssey app, wherever you may be. NBC Sports Washington is the TV home. We're presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Bickle, Johnny Cake Sawville, and Jason Bishop. Joining us right now to talk some Washington Nationals on the BetQL guest hotline is Jesse Dougherty, covers the Nats for the Washington Post, wrote an excellent article about Steven Strasburg. And Jesse, it was very informative. I left feeling quite depressed about it and feeling bad for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a happy article, that's for sure.
No, it's not a pick-me-up.
No, it's a good way to start the week. You know, it's really happy stuff. But no, I mean, yeah, the outlook's not good. I mean, as I unpacked in the story, he's shut down from all physical activity again, which, you know, as of mid-April, he was trying to get going again and see if he could make a push, and it just didn't happen. And, you know, you do start to wonder how many pushes he has left, if any, and that's kind of the state of play for him right now.
In spring training, was he around the team? Because you note that he wasn't there for opening day and hasn't been around the team. And I remember hearing
Mike said
that
he was
doing workouts.
I used to ask him.
Yeah, so he wasn't in West Palm during spring training. As of early April, he was trying to work out. He would come to Nationals Park early in the morning when they were on the road. He would work out at a Nova facility in Northern Virginia. And then on the, you know, in last week of April is when even the lower body exercises he was doing to try and ramp up and try and just keep his legs going started to irritate his right side and irritate the nerve damage that he's dealing with. So yeah, as of like, you know, that month he was attempting to do things, but he hasn't in the last, you know, 6 or so weeks.
Can you remind people, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but like how many people have had this procedure and successfully come back to the majors? Isn't it like only like one or two guys and not very successfully?
Yeah. So it's kind of like a sliding scale. So like, I don't have the exact number, but I've done a good bit of research on this. And like what happens is, there's a lot of factors. Like the earlier you have it, the better, right? Because like a major factor in recovery is previous wear and tear on your arm. So like the actual surgery itself is invasive and tough and can be difficult to come back from. But what's even harder to come back from is if you've already had Tommy John surgery, labrum surgery, you know, back elbow surgeries, whatever it may be. So what we know about Steven Strasburg, obviously, is he did not go into the TOS surgery with a fresh arm or a fresh shoulder or a fresh neck area. He goes in with a lot of history where I'll use an example that's close to home right now. Like Cole Hemry is a Nationals top pitching prospect, had TOS surgery last August and had never been operated on before for his arm. And he is, you know, who knows what happens in his career, prospects, health, whatever, but he's throwing 95. He's getting back to he's already back on the mound in affiliated baseball. So that's a major difference. So, you know, Matt Harvey's held up as the guy who couldn't make it back. I mean, again, older when he had it. Kenny Rogers was kind of the first name in, you know, back in like the early 2000s who had it, but he got it as sort of this last ditch attempt to pitch at 37. So then he's not going to make it back. So it's kind of known as this surgery that's been like, if all else fails, go to this. and if you're already a guy who's doing the thing to that because all else has failed, you're already not in a good position to come back anyway. So I think that's the major factor is age, arm history. Chris Archer's a pitcher in recent years who came back and was like serviceable for the Twins after he had it. He's not what he once was, but he's pitching. Merrill Kelly on the Diamondbacks is a serviceable starter in their rotation after having it in his 20s. So
he's been really good. Merrill Kelly's been really good.
Right. Yeah. So that's an example of like, you know, guys can pitch again, but it's but age factors and injury history are probably the biggest factors in recovery, not just the surgery and how it goes.
Jesse, how much are the Nats, I mean, in hindsight's 2020, but how much are they kicking themselves for not getting insurance on that massive deal? Like, they have to look at that now and be like, well, what were we thinking here?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's tricky because, like, some teams, like, insure contracts as a matter of course. Nationals never have. Like, the Scherzer contract, the Zimmerman contract, Stevens' first contract, none of these were insured. So it's never, something they have not done as part of their contract structure. In this case, like I put in the story, and I think it's fair to them to say this, like that would have been a really hard arm to insure. Now, of course, like if you look hindsight, it's like, whether that's $30 million extra dollars, like you do that because you want to save the money. Like at the time, though, that feels like a really big amount. And there's all these sort of like caveats in those insurance policies about he has to pitch a certain number of games for it to even activate. So like, who knows if they even would have touched the money. It's just the reason we reported it, and I think you're right. I mean, obviously, hindsight is 2020, and you'd love to have it. The reason we reported it mostly is because it's such a big question right now in baseball. I think the Carlos Correa situation made fans like acutely aware of insurance and injuries and how contracts work. So more than ever this spring, I've been getting questions like, is it insured? Is it insured? Is it insured? So I went and got the answer. But yeah, it's like, those insurance policies are super wonky, and like finding a partner to insure that arm because you're saying like, you know, you're going to pay us money if this breaks down. And I think a lot of insurance companies would have said, you know, I don't know about that. And so I think what it speaks to is, and this is a whole different discussion, and I'm just putting it out in the world rather than sharing my opinion, but if you can't insure a contract, or if it's that hard to insure, should you be signing it in the first place, I think is really the question.
Talking to Jesse Docherty, writes for the Washington Post, covers the Nationals. So one thing that struck me about this weekend as they played the Phillies, obviously – a lot of former Nationals. Kyle Schwarber hit a couple home runs. He was with the Nationals. Harper, Turner, all that stuff is. They had about the same record going in. So maybe that says a lot about the Phillies, but let's talk about the Nationals side of it. They've been playing better baseball than we would have expected.
I think at one point, Jesse, I saw a stat in the last few days where they were like 18 and 16 or something in their last 34, whatever that is, right?
Yeah. They're I don't even want to say overachieving because – I mean, they are relative to expectations, but they're playing decent baseball. I think the main thing is that the starting pitching is a lot better than last season. And that's like, there's a few reasons for that. There's improvements for Josiah Gray, improvements for Patrick Corbin, which have been a revelation. And Trevor Williams is a much more stable back-end starter than Eric Fetty was. And then Mackenzie Gore has been really good in flashes. So you just have all-around better rotation, which changes everything. The defense is better. The offense is, you know, give or take on a given night, can explode, but can go really cold. But when that starting rotation isn't just like lighting the bullpen on fire night after night and just keeping you behind, like it's happened here some games, but if you guys remember last season, it was like second inning exit, first inning exit, third inning exit. I mean, you just can't live that way. It just, that sets you back a week, let alone in the night you're playing in. And I think the starting pitching last season just made it so the Nationals just simply could not compete. That's how you get to 107 losses. You don't get to 107 losses by just purely not hitting. I mean, you can, but it really is if you can't pitch and you don't have a rotation, that's how you get to 107 losses. So I think I wasn't sure if the rotation was going to improve. Like you can't know if Josiah Gray is going to take that step. You can't know what Mackenzie Gore is after missing all the second half last year. And then Patrick Corbin too is like always kind of a question mark in the last few seasons. So the fact that it has just been a major difference in watching them. Aesthetically, they're just such a better team to watch this season. And then the results, like, that keeps you in games. And they've competed. They've come back some. They've lost a lot of games with their bullpen in late innings. So, like, that record, in theory, could be even better with some, you know, with some meltdowns avoided. So, it's really been a major difference. But I know I probably sound like Mike Rizzo right now, but like starting pitching is the reason for that. I mean, it really is, and that's why they've improved so much.
Right. And on the flip side, the Phillies are bad because their starting pitching has been really bad. Zach Wheeler has sucked. Tywan Walker has sucked. Trey Turner's hitting 235. You know, Schwarber's hitting bombs, but he's hitting 175. And I read online the Philly papers, and they're killing them because some of these guys just aren't earning what they're getting paid for, including Turner.
Yeah, I mean, this might come back to bite me because of what they did last year. But, like,
right.
putting the series aside, like, look, you took two or three from the Nationals, which you should. You probably, the way you've spent money and built that team, you should sweep the Nationals, really. That team just does not move me at all. It just doesn't. Like, if the top two starters are not going like they were in last year's playoffs, which is a big ask to be going that well, I just don't see, like, a lot of lineup balance. They don't defend that well.
Right.
The bullpen's uninspired. I mean, there's some guys in the back end of the bullpen that are good if they can get them a lead, and I get that. But middle relievers are just pitching to a lot of contact. I just don't really see it. Like, watching them this weekend, like, I just was not moved at all.
Hey, so you were talking about defense. C.J. Abrams, I think, is up to 12 errors. The throw that he had, I can't remember what game it was, where it was an unassisted double play. He tagged second, and he threw the ball. You remember it.
Friday
night. He threw the ball like 30 feet left of Dominic Smith. I think he was playing first. I mean, what is going on with – I like C.J. I do. But, man, he's got to get more consistent defensively.
No, he does. And I think, like, that play, too, is like – a good distillation of what he is, right? Like he makes a pretty athletic play, gets to the bag, he's fast, and then like, whoop, you know, and that's like a rookie shortstop, I think. I mean, you're putting a guy who like barely had played in the minors before last August when he came up because of the COVID year, because of injuries, because of when he was drafted. You're putting him in the most premier defensive position in the sport. And there's gonna be so many eyeballs on him at shortstop and every mistake, like, it doesn't feel that way at second for some reason, or at third base. But like when you make mistakes at shortstop, like, and I do it too, like, we all see that, you know, and it feels really, really bad because that's supposed to be a position you have locked down that is the most sure-handed guy on the team. So I think it's growing pains. Like, I don't think this is him for his career. At the plate too, like, he'll hit a 450-foot homer to right field, and you're like, oh my gosh. And then the next five at-bats look totally uncompetitive. And, you know, he's flailing, it falls in the dirt, and he's, you know, three or four pitches and he's out. And I think it's just kind of like the C.J. Abrams experience right now. To me, it's been more good than bad solely because of his age and experience. Like, I take more good from it, but like, it can be a tough watch at times, and it can be sort of like, it can be like, oh, is this guy going to come around? And I think that's just what it looks like to have a guy who like probably should be like on the AAA majors cusp right now, given sort of his specs. Like, I think it's just like watching all that growth happen in the major leagues is going to lead to that.
So I'm sure you saw this, but James Wood in the five games against Bowie here over the weekend, he started off 0-for-9, but then his last three games he hit two bombs. He went 3-for-5 yesterday. So he's obviously one of the Nats' top prospects. Do you think that? I don't think it's going to be him, but can you give us a couple names you think might be called up from the minors? I don't know, in July, after some sort of a deadline, maybe September. Can you give us a couple names you think might be some of the younger players we might see later in the season?
Yeah. I think a major consideration there and an instructive case is like Corbin Carroll, who's visiting this week with the Diamondbacks last season, is if teams bring them up after a certain deadline, which is like 45 days left in the season, and then beyond that, they still maintain rookie eligibility for the next season. Mm-hmm. And that's now important because aside from all the service time discussions people have, it's also you can get draft pick compensation from guys if they finish, you know, in the top two, top three of rookie of the year voting, Cy Young voting, all that. So there are incentives now in the draft to bring guys up, but also just like kind of make sure they maintain their eligibility. So I would say like you'd be looking at sort of a September, late August call up for any one of these players that could potentially be in that bucket. And that applies to top 100 prospects. So the two obvious names are outfielders, James Wood and Robert Hassel III. And the reason why they're the obvious ones are not just because of the skill level and because they're in double A, but also because like, if you look at the deadline and players in Nationals could move, like Corey Dickerson's a candidate. Frankly, I think Lane Thomas could be a candidate. I don't have that like reported out that they're shopping him or fielding offers or anything, but he's hit really well. And I think it could be a situation where you see some other fourth outfielder types in your system and don't need to keep him around for the next 3-4 years. So if you're thinking about that there's potential movement in the corner outfield spots, then those guys make a lot of sense. And they are sort of the top guys that are closest to the majors, where some of the other big names like Brady House, like Elijah Green, are farther down the lower levels and not you know, a phone call away.
Right.
We've seen a lot of guys jump from double A. I do think that with both those players, if they hit really well and if James Wood continues on this pace, like, they'll get him triple A at bats because there's no rush right now. Mm-hmm. Like, Soto made that jump because Howie Kendrick got hurt. That team was trying to compete. They needed an outfielder in that moment. This team won't ever have like a rush scramble player to the majors. Like, the development timeline will be very methodical, and this can be prescribed and not sort of accelerated by any outside factors. So
wow.
I would guess both those guys, you know, make a pit stop in AAA at some point, whether it's before coming up at the end of this year, next year. But, you know, I also think, like, for Mike Rizzo and for the front office and for the coaching staff, they're all in contract years. And I think there's something to be said for showing ownership, sort of the guys you got in these trades. It's one thing to be hitting in Bowie, and that's great, but it's another thing to be hitting in the show. You know, if you're a young player that came back in this blockbuster trade that you kind of put yourself on the line with. So I do think that might factor in too. And that's just human nature to say, like, we want to show everyone what we did here and bring up some guys that maybe are ready. So I'm not saying it's definitely September, but I think that all those factors should be considered.
Jesse, we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about the sale of the Commanders. But before we even got to the sale of the Commanders, the Nationals were supposed to be sold. Whatever happened to that?
They got some good cover locally in terms of the Commander sale being a whole thing, right? Everyone kind of forgot.
Yeah.
I mean, just, I think, pretty simple, like, lack of the offer you want. So you hold on and see if it will clear up down the road. I mean, we'll report this till our faces are blue, and we're going to have to keep doing it. But the Madsen situation is a major roadblock, I think. Not seeing a necessary end in sight for that, or a sort of easy path to a buyout or a change there for a potential owner is a huge, you know, factor. I mean, it's media rights and TV or how you make your money right now. And that's, you know, we've seen with the whole Sinclair situation in Bally's, it's like, it's a whole mess there. And the future of TV and baseball and TV is so murky, but like, to go into a situation where you just have no control and the team up the road is pulling all the strings and has obviously proven across the last, you know, 15 years or so, whatever, plus that they're not going to play nicely. You know, that's like, if I'm shopping for an MLB franchise, like, why pick that one when there are potentially other ones coming up in the future that don't have that problem, right? Or, frankly, the one up the road is going to be available at some point, and I'm a local guy who wants to own a baseball team, and that team controls all the media rights. So I think, like, it's pretty easy to see why the Nationals maybe didn't get their price. Also, knowing the Lerner family, like, they set their price high and they wait to get it. There's a reason why Nationals Park is still called Nationals Park. Most teams in baseball get money for their naming rights, and we don't see a lot of non-brand name stadium names anymore. So I think thinking about their negotiating tactics in the ways we can see the fact there's no stadium name. We can see the fact that there's no jersey patch on the Nationals uniform. We know that they like getting their price, and that's their negotiating style. They don't cave to that. So then now thinking about them trying to sell a whole franchise, I think it's easy to see why, you know, they haven't gotten their price, and they've held pat on. They've held pat on a lot of things over the years. So I think it's sort of if you would want the team to be sold, it's the wrong combination of negotiators, situation, TV rights deal, et cetera. And if you are someone who hopes that the Lerners make as much money as they possibly can, then it's the right combination of those things, because they're probably holding out for a better deal that may or may not come. So that's sort of the state of play with it. But yeah, it's kind of just faded into a non-story, which is very weird, which frankly is a story.
All right, Jesse, good stuff. That's Jesse Dougherty, covers the Nationals for the Washington Post. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, with the Commander sale, you just forgot that the Nats are up for sale, but
right.
I guess maybe they're not really for sale right now.
Well, it makes a good point about the fact that they haven't named the stadium and they haven't, you know, sold a jersey patch. Maybe the price is just too high for others to meet at this point.
Coming up next is Chase Young's absence at the OTAs ruffling some feathers.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.